In the evening, Inspector Kent pays his visit, and though he makes a fuss over our paintings drying by the fires, we know that this is far from a social call. With three men gone, it must be seen to. He brushes the mud from his boots, having spoken already to Miller's men and the gypsies. He makes discreet inquiries among the younger girls, turning it into a sort of game to see if any of them have heard or seen some clue, however small. At last it is our turn, and we are ushered into the small parlour with its cosy furnishings and warm fire. Bridget has brought the inspector a cup of tea. The inspector's eyes have always had a merry twinkle in them, but now he's on official business for the yard. Those eyes seem to look through me and find my sins. I swallow hard and take my seat. The inspector chats merrily with us about our day, the parties we shall attend shortly, Spence's impending masked ball. It is meant to disarm us, but it seems only to increase my apprehension. He takes out a small notebook. He wets his thumb and uses it to flip through pages until he has the one he wants.
Ah, here we are. Now, ladies, have you heard anything unusual? Sounds late at night. Have you noted anything amiss? Anything suspicious?
Nothing, Anne stammers. She bites her cuticle until Felicity takes hold of her hand, no doubt squeezing it tight enough to cut off the flow of blood in her arm. We are asleep, Inspector. How could we possibly know what goes on with Mr. Miller's men? Felicity says. The inspector's pencil hovers over the page. His eyes flick from Anne's face to the sudden hand-holding. He smiles warmly.
The smallest detail might be the biggest of clues. No need for shyness.
Have you any suspects? I ask. Inspector Kent holds my gaze for a second longer than is comfortable.
No, but that gives credence to my theory that these men, under the bottle spell, wandered away from the camp to sleep it off, and then, fearing the foreman's wrath, decided to leave altogether. Or perhaps it is an effort to bring suspicion on the gypsies.
Perhaps it is the gypsies, Felicity adds quickly. I should like to kick her.
That would be convenient,
the inspector says, stirring milk into his tea.
Too convenient, perhaps, though I did see that one of theirs was missing this evening.
Kartik, he's gone already.
Well, the truth shall come to light. It always does.
Inspector Kent sips his tea.
Aye, that's what's right with the world. A good cup of tea.
When we return to the realms, I'm ill at ease. The trouble with my brother, my visit with Cersei, and the fight with Kartik all weigh heavily on me. But the others are merry and ready for a grand party. Felicity takes Pippa's hands in hers, and they twirl about on the thick carpet of vines. They laugh like the old friends they are. I envy them. Soon the others join in the dance. May and Mercy take Wendy's hands and lead her about. Even Mr. Darcy hops in his cage, as if he should like to take a partner. Only I stand apart. And secretly, I fear it shall always be this way. Me alone, belonging to no one, no tribe, always standing just outside the party. I try to push the thought away, but it has already spoken truth to my soul. The sadness of my independence sinks deep into my blood. It rushes through my veins with a fierce, pulsing refrain. You are alone, alone, alone. Felicity whispers in Pip's ear. They close their eyes, and Pip calls out, Gemma, for you! There is a tap on my shoulder from behind. I turn to see Kartik dressed in a black cloak, and my heart leaps for a moment. He could be Kartik, but he isn't. The others laugh at Pip's little joke. I'm not amused. I put my hand on his shoulder, drawing on my own magic, and he becomes a doddering old pirate with a peg leg. That one, I say, pointing to Pippa. She desires a dance. Off with you. It is a very happy party, everyone laughing, singing and dancing, so they don't notice when I slip away and walk to the river, where I find Gorgon returning from her travels.